In the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. Blessed fast of the apostles. Also, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there and to all the moms who are pulling double duty. And also, as I mentioned, on Mother's Day, I know these types of days are not always joyful for various reasons, but whatever end of the spectrum that you're on, know that you're seen, that you are loved, and know that you are prayed for as well. As we just heard a few minutes ago, today's gospel is one that we are pretty familiar with. We know that Christ is preaching. The house is filled that he's preaching in. That there's a man who's suffering from paralysis. And his friends try to bring him to Christ, but they can't because the crowd because the crowd was blocking the way. So what they had to do is open the roof of the house that Christ was preaching in and let him through the roof that where Christ was. So Christ could heal him. All they had to do was just put him in front of Christ. Okay. So it's a beautiful story of friendship, faith, and healing, as we know. But as I was reading this story, I couldn't help but think of another man who was also suffering and had four friends. But unlike the friends that we hear about today, these four guys were not very helpful. Okay, anybody know who I have in mind? Job, right? Job. So for some reason, when I read this story, I automatically thought of Job. Okay. We know that Job was a very rich man, not just from a materialistic sense, but also from a spiritual sense. Okay, he was someone who literally had everything that anybody could ask for, and plenty left over for everybody that needed. He was a very giving man as well. But as we know through the various trials that he experienced, he lost everything that he had. And when he lost, and he not only did he lose everything, including his health, but then his friends came to try and console him and make him feel better about the situation. And they didn't do a very good job of that, okay? So if you ever read the book of Job, they really do a terrible job of making him feel better about what he's going through. They mean well, and they had good intention, but the execution was very lacking. The first friend, whose name was Eliphaz, he came and he tried making Job feel better about things by relying on his assessment of the situation, right? He used worldly wisdom to justify what was happening. So he was very big on the reason that Job was going through. Everything that he was going through was because, obviously, Job sinned. Like, what else could it be? In his mind, the situation was very black and white. Job did something wrong, therefore he is suffering. Even though there were certain things that he said that may have been right, he offered knowledge over empathy, right? He offered knowledge over empathy. He was very emotionally tone deaf, despite some of the valid points that he may have been saying. So instead of sympathizing with Job's pain, he tried to explain it away with a diagnosis based on what he perceived was going on. Okay? We'll label him the traditional friend. Okay? He was a very traditional view of suffering. The second friend, whose name was Bildad, he decides to chime in and provide his own view of Job's situation and tells him that he's suffering because God is exacting justice. Okay? In a sense, God was wronged and he's taking his anger out on Job. He even tells him that the children that Job lost, because they themselves wronged God, so God delivered them into their own transgressions. Okay? He gave them what they deserve. Very comforting words, as you can see. Right? Bildad's approach is very, very harsh. He not only goes after Job, but after his kids as well, essentially blaming them for their own death. Okay? That's not only theologically incorrect, but it's also emotionally very, very crushing. Right? Imagine what you're going through a tough time, and somebody says, well, you got what you deserved. It's pretty soul-crushing, right? Some of us don't have to imagine that. We probably heard something similar or another at some point in our lives. So to Bildad, God was this cold judge who makes people suffer for what they have done wrong. He probably viewed God as holding a weapon, that if somebody sinned against him, then he was going to use that weapon. The issue is that it leaves no room for mercy, no room for grace, no room for forgiveness. So we're going to label him the legalistic friend. Okay? He had a very legalistic view of God. The third friend Job had was Zophar. Okay? And this was a perfect name for him because he was Zophar from making Job feel better about the situation. Okay? I worked hard on that one. Okay? But Zophar is one of those people who says whatever's on his heart, even if it's very, very cruel. Okay? Even after losing his wife, his children, his health, his possessions, literally everything, Zophar tells Job that God gave him less than he actually deserved. Zophar didn't just lack empathy, but he actually was very arrogant, thinking that he knew exactly why God allowed what he allowed. And he used that as an opportunity to kick Job while he was down. There was no compassion, there was no gentleness, there was no willingness to listen at all. Just straight judgment. In his eyes, Job actually needed to be thankful things weren't worse. So we're going to label him the harsh friend because of the way he acted and what he said. And the fourth friend that Job had was Elihu, right? And he was the youngest one in the group. And he comes in very hot, right? He tells him that they're all wrong and to listen to him instead because he has it all figured out. He was very presumptuous, right? He stayed quiet the entire time just out of respect for the older ones. But once he started talking, he didn't really hold back at all. He spoke with confidence and boldness of someone who was young, who thinks they have it all figured out. He was probably a teenager. I'm just kidding. Maybe. He criticized Job, right, for justifying himself before God. And he criticized the older friends for giving incorrect answers. He actually said a lot of very solid points, if you read what he said, but he was very articulate in what he said. But he lacked what Job needed the most in that time, which was discernment, compassion, gentleness, and presence. So we're going to label him the presumptuous friend, because he thought he had it all figured out. So between the four friends we hear about today, and Job's four friends, we see two similar stories, but two very different approaches with two different, very different results. Okay? I know that it could be very intimidating when we see other people suffering, and oftentimes we don't know what to do or what to say. But I think today's story teaches us what is needed in these times. And it's the exact opposite of what Job's friends did. The first thing, that it needs discernment, not traditionalism. Okay? It needs discernment. By that, it doesn't need me to try to figure it, the reason behind the suffering somebody else is experiencing and say, maybe because of this, or maybe it's because of that. The reality is, we'll never know the why. Okay? The why is beyond many of us. So my job is to try to be a discerning friend. Instead of asking why, maybe I need to help the person by identifying other things, right? Like, what does God want to teach from this? What does God want to transform through this? What does faithfulness look like during this difficult season? Where is God present in this pain, even if he's not felt? When I begin to help others figure that out, then I'm not allowing suffering to get the final say or allowing it to overshadow the person's life at all. But I'm helping them navigate through it and grow from it. Okay? These kinds of questions don't ignore the suffering, but they honor it in a way by approaching it with humility and faith and the desire to go through it, not to grow through it, not just escape it. Okay? That's what discernment looks like. It doesn't rush to speak or jump into any conclusions, but it listens, it prays, it acts with wisdom and sensitivity to the person that's in front of me. So when we respond to suffering of others in that way, we become a vessel for healing instead of a voice of confusion in their life. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we need compassion, not legalism. A lot of times we feel the urge to speak for God and declare the legal stance on the suffering and the pain of others by justifying what's happening. We say that God is angry at what's happening, so if we're responding, we're sending a message through this suffering. Like, really? Is that so? Is that... That may be or may not be true. Who knows? But who told you that? Who made me or you judge over this all of a sudden? Father Greg Boyle, he says, the issue is that our idea of God and what's on his mind is more tiny than it is troubled. We trap God in this box, and we think that he has to act this way or that way. But in doing so, we limit God himself, because God is beyond all of that. He can't be boxed in. God is not defined by what I have in mind. His ways are not my ways, and his thoughts are not my thoughts. So I need to let God be God and try to be God myself. Instead of speaking up for God and defending him, I need to act like God and give compassion to others. Because more often than not, people don't get an explanation for their suffering. They just need a refuge from it. They don't need this big theological debate. They need somebody to reflect the heart of God in that moment. Someone who is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, and abounding in mercy. That's how God describes himself. Right? When we default to legalism, we risk misrepresenting God. And in trying to defend him, we end up distorting him altogether. No different than what Job's friends did. But compassion does what legalism can't. And it sees the person, not the problem. It enters into their experience without needing to explain it away in any way, shape, or form. It reminds them that they are not alone, but they are loved. Even in their suffering, God is still near. The third thing we need is gentleness, not harshness. I know sometimes when people are suffering, we may be gentle for a little bit, but then we run out of patience, right, with the person, and we want them to just get over it. Maybe I don't think it's that big of a deal. Or maybe in trying to lift them up, we give them the, hey, at least it's not as bad as it could have been line. Or the other people have a worse line that we sometimes are guilty of. The four friends of the paralyzed man could have said any of these things, but they didn't. So we shouldn't either. The reality is people suffer differently. All people are created equal, but not necessarily in the way people handle the pain and the suffering and the hardships that they experience. What may be easy for some could be very, very difficult for others. What we may take a short time to get over can take years for others. What may not be a big deal for me could be a life-changing event for other people. So pain and suffering is not a competition to see who gets over it quicker. But it's a process, and everybody processes these things differently. So let's be gentle in our approach with others. Let's not rush anyone. Let's not try to fix anybody. Let's just sit with the person, support them, and love them where they are. Our words and our approach need to be seasoned with grace. That's the approach that Christ took with the Samaritan woman. He took with Peter after the denial, and he took with Thomas after he doubted him. He didn't push anybody to move faster than what they were ready for, but he met them with gentleness and truth, not forcing them, not trying to fix them in any way. He just offered himself. And the fourth and the final thing we need is presence over presumptuousness. So instead of trying to explain everything to sound like I know it all and just say a whole bunch of nothing, sometimes all that is needed is to simply sit with the person in their pain and their suffering. Oftentimes the best way to help people isn't to say anything, but to just show up and say little or nothing at all. Words can never heal a broken heart anyways. I know that's hard because we feel like we need to say or do something, but actually just being present with somebody without seeing anything could be a source of healing in and of itself. I'm not sitting there doing nothing, but I'm actually active in my presence, even if I don't see anything. As one author puts it, he says, being present is not passive. It may look passive, but in fact, it's very active. It's active listening, active attention, active concern, and active prayer. So presence creates a space for me to listen more and talk less, to pay attention to what's needed from me at that time, to be concerned with how they're doing, not just what they're saying, to worry less and to pray more for them. So this is the kind of presence that tells the person, you're not alone through what you're going through, but I'm here for you and I'm with you. It allows me to reflect the heart of God who is near to the brokenhearted by simply being near myself. It's exactly the way God is with us in our suffering. Many times with no explanations, but he's always Emmanuel, right? He's always God with us, even in the silence. So if we compare Job's friends with the four friends that we read about today, we see a big, big difference between the two. Okay? Job's friends approach to suffering was that they tried to explain it away. The four friends of the paralyzed man that we read about today took action to bring healing. Job's friend's view of God is that he's a strict judge who punished sin. The four friends of the paralyzed man saw him as a merciful God who heals. Job's friends talked for chapters and chapters, but really didn't say anything. The four friends of the paralyzed man didn't say a word, but their actions spoke volumes. Job's friends accused, corrected, and debated Job, but the four friends of the paralyzed man carried, climbed, and lowered him in faith. Job's friends tried to justify God's justice and to prove a point, but the four friends of the paralyzed man simply brought their friend to Christ. So the end result in both stories is that Job's friends were rebuked by God for misrepresenting him, but in today's story, we see Christ praising the faith of the friends. So I pray that we could all be more like the friends of the paralyzed man when we see people around us hurting or suffering or going through a difficult time in their life. Right? That we walk with people on the road of discernment. That we take them up the steps of compassion. That we open the roof of gentleness to them and simply put them in the presence of Christ for Him to heal, renew, and uplift them. Nothing to explain, nothing to justify, nothing to try to fix, nothing to make better with empty words. Just Christ. Just Christ. And glory be to God forever.